Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to another episode of Betches Brides. I'm your host, Fallon Carter. And before we kick off this episode, I just wanted to let our listeners know that this will be my final episode of Betches Brides. I've had an amazing time. That's literally an understatement, working on this podcast and connecting with so many of you and learning about your love stories and what you have coming down the line. So as for what's next for Betches Brides, well, I'll be passing the baton to a new host who is in the midst of planning her wedding. So watch the Betches Brides Instagram account and this feed here for more details. So I'll be continuing to help brides in real life and online via my planning company, Fallon Carter Events. So please, I insist, do stay in touch with me via my account at Fallon Carter Events and at I Am Fallon Carter on social media. You can slide into my DMs. I would love to answer any of your planning questions. And today, on this week's episode, I'm very, very excited because these are my friends. These are people I love and know, and they also kind of look over my contract and tell me when I'm being obnoxious. But anywho, we have Kumbi and Leah. They're the co-founders of NYC's based law firm, Odeberg Law, LLP. Kumbi and Leah focus on general representation of small businesses and creative entrepreneurs. And I wanted to bring them on to chat about all things contract, which you guys send us so many questions about in DMs. And we want to continue to encourage you to please send your emails to brides@betches.com because we love to hear from you. And please slide in our DMs whenever with all of your burning questions. But without further ado, Kumbi, Leah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Let's do this. So I want you guys to do your normal spiel that you guys are both attorneys. You've practiced law. And Leah, you've been a wedding planner at one point.
Yes, for 10 years, for a decade. So,
yeah. You've seen things. But just give us a little bit of disclaimer that this is advice and guidance and you're not their lawyers.
I love that you're saying, like, there's never a reason for an attorney not to want to say a disclaimer. So I love that you think that you have to force us to say this. But basically, yes, we are attorneys, pretty great attorneys at that. But please note that everything that we do discuss here today is for general educational, informational purposes only. We are not your attorneys. I know it sounds like we don't have to say it, but we do. We are not your attorneys unless you and either one of us or a member of our firm has signed an engagement letter stating that we are representing you, because then we'll know what your story is about. We'll know how we can help you. And then we'll know how to give you proper legal advice. If you do quote us, we probably will deny it. So I'm just telling you now because we're not trying to get sued. There we go.
Period. Well, to get us started off, I think the first question is kind of like, what is a contract and why do you need it and what's the importance? I think we get a lot of questions from people who are like, well, my friend, I'm sure they're going to show up, but what's the real importance? And Leah, we'll start with you. Like, why do we actually have to have a contract and kind of what is it?
Yeah. The contract outlines the obligations of both sides, of both parties. So it benefits you, the people getting married, to have a contract with your vendor. It benefits the vendor to have a contract with you, the people getting married, so that they know that they're going to get paid. You know that they're going to perform their services. And I think most importantly of all, that contract is going to cover what happens if something goes wrong or if somebody is not holding up their end of the bargain. We don't want that to be a guessing game when we get to that point. We want your contract to be thorough and detailed and clear about both parties' obligations and then what happens if somebody is not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Kumbi, what would you say is like the first thing you should be looking at or kind of thinking about as you're approaching a contract? Like you're going into your venue and you've got one in front of you and you're like, what should a bride or a nearly wed actually be looking for in that contract?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question because it's probably several. But first of all, I want to make sure that I'm entering into this contract with the venue itself, like making sure that it's clear as to who the party is. It's just, it sounds like a small thing, but like if you're looking from the top down, you want to kind of know that, but also that they've gotten the right date and it's for the actual place that you are renting. With a venue, that conversation has to be like, you know, clear so that there's no confusion. Like Leah said, the biggest part of a contract is really making sure that the obligations on both parties are exactly what you want them to be, exactly what you guys have actually agreed upon. So as for the beginning, it's going to be obviously, then we can talk about money and when everything is due and what happens if you cancel. But for the first thing, I want to make sure it is an actual valid contract and it does state exactly where I'm booking, if I'm booking that venue for what day, how many hours. And that's just the venue I'm speaking on now, but you want to make sure that you're booking the person for the right time.
Okay. I've seen a lot of, I was like, this is the wrong date. This ain't even a right time. But also it's like when sometimes before you even get to a contract, there are so many things that you're talking about that are like, oh yeah, we'll throw that in. Yeah. That's included. Yeah. That's sure. What are some other things that people should be thinking about when it comes to some things that it might have been vocalized that you may not see transparent?
I get all of that in writing.
I think that's actually, no, honestly, and I'll let Leah speak on this, but one thing that we get as lawyers is people coming back and saying, oh, your contract is too long. But she just said something magical right there, Leah, like speaking on get everything in writing, because he said, she said, and everything that's outside of the contract, you don't want to have to start trying to like stand on it when you don't have it properly documented. So yes, definitely get everything in writing. Like all the things that you talked about 3 months ago, the stuff that, anything before that contract was signed, get it in writing.
Right. Like if your venue is going to upgrade your alcohol package, if your photographer is going to throw in an album, if your DJ is going to include uplights for no charge, make sure all of that is in your contract. Otherwise, they're not, frankly, bound to do that stuff.
So like if it was in an email, they wouldn't be tied to like, I will say sometimes I've pulled up an email thread and I'm like, okay, this wasn't particularly in the contract, but here you say that you will offer me this. Is an email still kind of a binding thing, or can people be like, I changed my mind now?
Frankly, it depends on when the email was sent, because if the email was sent before the contract is going to have language that specifically says that it supersedes any prior discussions. So if that email came first, that email essentially gets overridden by the contract. If the email came after the contract, then you are going to have a much stronger stance to argue that they are obligated to do it.
Another thing, and Kumbi, you can help me with this one. When I reached out to a venue, they said in the proposal that they sent back that the price of the venue was $13,000 and inclusive was the main reception tent and a catering tent, a cook tent. And so we signed a contract, but in the contract, those details weren't there. And so now they're telling me I have to pay for the cook tent. And then I was like, wait a minute, there's a proposal that we have that says that's included. Is there such thing as like kind of agreements or things that need to be in, like, should you be asking for those refined details to be included? Or what is your suggestion on how to navigate wording on one document said one thing? My contract doesn't say nothing, but I think a cook tent should be paid for by not me.
So this is exactly what Leah was speaking about. So this is the whole thing about having a contract, is you don't want to have to start grasping for everything to be able to establish that there was proper offer, proper acceptance, and like, you know, the fact that there's consideration there, which is usually what the prongs of a contract are, right? And especially if your contract says this supersedes everything. Now, in your situation, the contract is ambiguous about what that actual amount is or what the number is there. So there could be chances where you're able to show that, listen, you made me this offer and I accepted, and this is in writing, and this is what made me, and I depended on this when I was induced me to make this agreement in the first place, even though it's not documented there. But to save everybody this stress and heartache and the cost of a lawyer to have to yell at this person on your behalf, you want to make sure that all of that is documented. I feel like we're way beyond the time where people say, oh, but I didn't even know what it was in that contract when I signed it. These are big boy things now. Like, these are things that are going to cost you money. And so we all need to, like, you know, try and make sure that when it comes to anything that you have to look at it from, and Lee and I always say this, and obviously it's the unfortunate story of being an attorney, but we're always looking at things from the perspective of what could go wrong, or like, how bad will this be if ish hits the fan? Do you know what I mean? But like, in this situation, it's the same thing. You want, you as the consumer also want to think like, okay, what is this going to cost me? Like, where is the money here? What about this thing? Like, you almost need to become a private investigator. Fallon and I have one friend we call a private investigator. You have to pull an Alicia here and like be like, where is this number in the document? So I think, basically, to answer your question in a nutshell, I think it's really important that you try and establish those parameters in black and white in writing in one singular document. Obviously, in the future, if anything changes, you can add it as an amendment. For instance, if you discover that it's not in there and you've already signed, request an amendment and have that memorialized, or addendum memorialized into the contract, so that it's something that we can all say is now part of the agreement, the primary agreement in itself.
Shout out to amendments.
That's a shirt. Shout out to amendments.
Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always afford the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you. Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for the season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. So Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you can get your choice of any six styles. You choose whatever you want to rent for whatever you have going on. It's totally up to you. There are no parameters. You get access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees. There's no late fees, no damage fees, no fees to pause or cancel. So no big deal if you like lose a button. Uh-oh, I spilled something on it. Or you just need to take a break. They have inclusive sizing all the way up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. You always have the option to buy what you love for sometimes up to 75% off. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any six styles. But right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code BRIDES20. Just go to NUULY.com. That's Nuuly with two U's, and enter the code BRIDES20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com. Nuuly with two U's with code BRIDES20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Leaning into the next question, and I think Kumbi just segued this perfectly, is kind of like dollars and cents, the monies, and what's that whole conversation starting to look like? The terms look good. I feel confident about moving forward, but what's this cost? Like, how do we break it down? Can I negotiate even different terms, like maybe a different payment schedule? Like, what is the power of a bride, a nearly wed, when it comes to those payment terms?
Here is my advice. It's kind of twofold. So once you've obviously you have those initial consults or meetings with the vendor sends you pricing info, you sort of agree in theory to like, okay, this is what I want. This is what it's going to cost me. Let's move forward with the contract. Once you've kind of said, hey, we're good. Let's move forward with the contract. Just as a sort of like be a good human factor, don't try to negotiate the price once you've moved to the contract stage. That's just sort of like, I mean, it's, you can theoretically do it. There's nothing stopping you from doing it. You're not bound by anything at that point, but it's just kind of like poor form, sort of poor sportsmanship to sort of make a vendor go through this whole process of selling you on something, and you clicked and you had a great call and you've agreed to all of this. And then they send you their contract and you start redlining the price. Like, that's just not cool. But what you can do at the beginning is have a conversation with your vendor if they come back with pricing that maybe doesn't work for your budget. You can let them know how much you have to spend. You can talk about whether it is a matter of tailoring their services a little bit in order to meet your budget. They don't have to say yes. And I think it's better to have a more cordial conversation instead of sort of saying like, hey, can you give me a discount for this? Sort of say, we really love you. This is how much we had budgeted to spend. Is there any way that we can make this work? It really is all about how you frame that conversation as to how your vendor is going to respond. Because the nicer you are and sort of the more collaborative you are in that process, the better response you're going to get, as opposed to just, oh, could you do this? Do the same thing for $1,000 less. That's going to offend somebody.
And I think I was more focused on like, can I negotiate the if they're asking for a 50% deposit, can I say, you know what, I actually can only do 25%? Like, is there some flexibility once you get the contract? Because now you're finally seeing the payment terms and you're like, oh, I actually don't have 50K ready to do. Can I do 30%? Like, is there flexibility there to navigate those terms?
You can absolutely ask. And it really comes down to the vendor and like what their cash flow situation is.
That part.
Yeah.
ding, ding, ding. So I guess, Kumbi, what would you say are some of the most common edits and or negotiations that you guys see kind of happening off the bat? Like that you might, everyone's like, I got to talk to my lawyer and they come to you.
Listen, that's a great question. So one, and this one's kind of like a duh, but like the scope of services, like depending on like, for instance, this conversation that you and Leah were having about money, there might be something like, okay, can you add in like, and like what you said as well, like, oh, they promised they'll throw in as an added bonus this into the services. Like, so negotiating back and forth with that is possible. You might be able to get something there, for instance, with a photographer. I'm sure that is a very common situation in terms of how many hours of coverage and how many albums, whatever, like through that for the extra money. So those usually are a lot more flexible. The payment terms, like you mentioned, I will say it's those things that you don't realize that you're negotiating are the ones that are the most, the ones that people tend to try and leave off of contracts, what we call the legalese aspect of the contract, where it's like, okay, some people might push for like, you know, in something called an indemnification clause. I've seen people negotiate mutual indemnification. Whether or not that is beneficial to the vendor is a different conversation. So I won't even go too much into that. But also negotiating what happens in the event of a rescheduling, or negotiating what happens in the event of a cancellation, negotiating what happens in the event that, like for instance, some people have started throwing it in here, like if the wedding's called off. Like, you know, if it's maybe it's different, or negotiating what happens, God forbid, if there's a death in like within the couple or anything like that. So those terms are typically what you will see. Negotiating, it seems silly, but even what like what kind of legal, how disputes are handled, like what happens in the event that there's some kind of dispute, like whether or not it's going to be like a mediation, arbitration, or if it's going to be like, let's just go, let's do what we need to do, you know, and box it out. There's that conversation as well. So I will say that a contract is a collaborative effort. Like it can be a collaborative effort. Yes, usually a vendor will present you with their contract, but if there's something there that you're not sure or comfortable about, negotiating the amount of staff that's going to be there on the day of, especially for a planner, that might be a conversation. Like how many people are you going to have on here? What does this entail? Negotiating the percentage off of the price of the planner. Some of these things obviously are still, people might not budge on because everybody has to make the money that they're entitled to. But
yeah,
there is no harm in asking.
And I think that you brought up a good point is a lot of times I'm sending contracts and I hardly understand some of the things that I'm even saying in there because I'm like, I don't really know what force majeure is. But anywho, somebody else wrote it. It's great. Sign this thing. But I also tell my couples that you should understand what you're signing. If you don't understand it, you have every right to go back to your vendor and say, so sis, what does this mean? Because I'm not a lawyer and they're not a lawyer, but we need to have a conversation to make sure we're all on the same page. Are there other questions that you think people should just be asking the vendor and feel like there's no such thing as a stupid question kind of thing? Like, are there any other things you would want to share?
There 100% is. There's so many. And I'll let Leah answer this question, especially since she has that, you know, wedding planner split in there as well. But like, there's so many things. Like, for instance, I just mentioned an indemnification clause. please find out what that means. And don't just think it means, I don't know, I can't even think of what indemnification could mean without it being that. Or the force majeure, it's not just a sexy French word. It literally means that something could significantly impact the services in your contract. So definitely ask those questions. But Leah, go ahead.
Yeah, everything also too. I mean, I can't stress enough that really understanding the rescheduling, cancellation, and force majeure policies of the vendor that you're contracting with, I can't stress how important that is, because that is really where a lot of people ultimately get tripped up if something happens and the wedding has to be postponed or called off or something like that. But what's interesting is that with each vendor, there are going to be a lot of vendor-specific provisions that you're going to see in there. Like with your photographers, you're going to see provisions about what happens if there's a technology failure and something happens to all of the photos, or like they leave the camera, they took an Uber home from the wedding and they leave the camera in the car, something like that. Mm. With your florist, you're going to want to talk about provisions about the seasonality of flowers and flowers being exposed to extreme weather conditions and kind of understanding the responsibility there. With your caterer, it's what happens if there's an increase in market prices of something, or there's a supply shortage, which we all went through back in 2021. Like, what happens? So it's, you know, there's these general kind of, there's common provisions you're going to see across all of your vendor contracts. And then there's going to be things that are very specific to what that person does. And so you just want to pay attention to those things and make sure you understand. It's so important to make sure you understand what you're signing.
What is a force majeure?
Okay. A force majeure is this gorgeous portion of the agreement where it basically says...
Can we title the episode, What is a Force Majeure?
Like, wait till you see our cocktail party. We're having a party.
You're getting an invite to our little cocktails and Force Majeure bash. So just know we're taking this on the road. The title of this episode should be WTF, What the Force Majeure? And I think that's it for you guys.
Oh, I like. But,
hello. One thing I can do in this life is name something. But hey, a force majeure is the sexiest part of a contract, basically just telling you that something big has happened. Something that has, like, literally, force majeure is, in the most basic way, means major force. Like, basically, something incredible has happened that's impacting one or both members, like both parties to the agreement, for being able in that moment to be able to complete the services. And that thing cannot just be anything, because people will really try and call the force majeure clause for any and everything, talking about, oh, my cat didn't poop today and here we are. But a force majeure really does have established parameters inside. This is the reason why it needs to be defined. And these things need to be established in your contract. It could be something like, for instance, a global pandemic. Like, literally, when the global pandemic had, not even maybe necessarily the pandemic itself, but the fact that the government had locked down certain places. And so people were literally unable to convene in the same manner and had, like, maybe whether, we know what happened. We're literally speaking right now during, like, the 4-year anniversary of when our lives all changed. So basically, something like that. Also, in certain places, it could be a weather situation. It could also be, like, for instance, like an unexpected flooding, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, major, like, it could be infestation. I don't know when that part of our matrix is going to happen, you know? So
that part.
But basically, a force majeure is something that intervenes in a way in which one party cannot continue. And so basically, what a force majeure clause will do is let you know what the steps are if such a thing happens, what you need to do in terms of notifying the other party as soon as possible so that they can also make plans. And then what happens, whether or not, like, basically stating that nobody's in breach of the terms of this agreement. It's just that it literally cannot happen at this moment. What happens if we choose to reschedule? Or what happens if, in the event that maybe both parties aren't available for a mutually available rescheduling date, does it now go to the cancellation clause? This is a very important aspect of a wedding agreement, a wedding services agreement.
Okay. And most importantly of all, it's got to talk about what happens to the money. in that case. Mm. If you reschedule, if you cancel because of a force majeure event, if the vendor can't, if maybe there's also situations where the wedding happens and like the vendor can't perform, they break a leg or something like that, getting their car breaks down on the way to the event. What happens when they don't show up? And then what happens to the money? That's what people a lot of times don't take it that extra step and just make it crystal clear in the contract what happens to the money in those situations.
Yes. We see a lot of contracts that we've reviewed. So you just basically define what the force majeure is, but then you don't really give instruction as to what happens
like, sure.
after that. Okay. Force majeure.
Mm-hmm, yay. Okay. That was really helpful. Who signs contracts? And does that signature need to be different based on who pays for it? And like, does everyone that's walking down this aisle need to pay? Do the people that are paying need to sign? Wait, talk to me about that trifecta.
Our motto is that the people who are walking down the aisle need to be the people on the contract. And that honestly benefits them because that means they're the client. That is who that vendor is going to listen to regardless of where the money is coming from. Like in most situations, the people who are getting married should be the decision makers. I know there's obviously situations where sometimes the parents, you know, the event's more for the parents than the people that are getting married. We'll just treat that as an outlier. But in general, the rule of thumb should be that the people who are getting married should be the one signing the contract. And it should be both of them as well.
Okay. And then if, like, let's say dad pays the deposit, is there anything that he has to sign that holds him to, like, the payment schedule? Or are we just automatically assuming that the couple's just going to navigate the payment? Or how does that work?
Technically, the couple is responsible for the payment under the contract. So if they're having a third party pay, they just need to make sure that's coordinated. There is an opportunity for a third party to sign what we call a third party payor addendum that just basically says, hey, you third party, you know, parent, whoever are responsible, are agreeing to make the payments under this contract. But just to be clear, you are still not the client under the contract. The people we're listening to at the end of the day for the decision-making process is the people walking down the aisle.
Okay, cool. Kumbi, question for you. Travel clauses, per diems, flights, mileage? What should I be looking for? I'm a bride. What should I be looking for in a contract?
Interesting. That was a very specific question for a bride. So I love it for you. But yes, anything that's going to cost you money, you need to read it like line by line. And that is one that you will see in a lot of vendor contracts, and rightfully so. You will see a travel clause that, especially if it's something like, for instance, if it's an event that's happening outside of like whatever the local place is for that particular vendor. And so you see stuff like, the client is responsible for travel fees outside of, for instance, 30 miles outside of the city or anything like that, and then you're responsible for accommodation. Usually what you want to see is how many days of accommodation are you responsible for. You don't want it to be too ambiguous in that regard, and I would hope that the vendor wouldn't want that as well. So it's clear as to how many days you're paying for, in what hotel. Typically you will see that maybe a vendor is going to request that it's in the host hotel, especially for a photographer, anybody.
Four actually, seasons anybody only.
Boom, period. So like anybody that's asking, like, you know, for that, it seems trivial, but trust me, there are lawsuits out there with conversations like this in them. So it makes sense. Like, you want to make sure that it's very clear as to where, it's clear as to how much, how many days, for instance, how much are you paying? Is it outside a certain mileage? For instance, if you're getting married in New York City, the vendor is in New York City. Are you paying for travel in that regard as well? Do you get what I mean? Mileage, that's a very great conversation for people that live in places where, for instance, the vendor is able to drive to the next place. That typically comes up in terms of how many outside of what mileage would you be responsible for? I've seen a situation with a with a client where there was conversation around who was driving the U-Haul and if whether or not the fact that the vendor had to use a U-Haul to deliver certain goods like outside of the city was covered under the travel clause, for instance. So you just want to make sure that you're reading that properly. For destination weddings, there'll be conversations around, well, not just destination weddings, but any wedding that's outside of the local area. There'll be conversations around flights. There will be conversations around what class in flight sometimes. So have business, that conversation. Please. Hello. And there will be conversations around what flight and what class for the like other members or supporting staff that will be coming along with whoever the primary is. There's a lot to be talked about. And you want to make sure that it's clear because ambiguity breeds boxing. Ambiguity will breed a fist fight.
I'm here for that. And I do want to get to this email because it's a pretty juicy one, but I want to kind of close this little segment out with what does it actually look like to sue a vendor? And what are some of the like you weren't happy with maybe the service that they performed or, you know, you guys are going through a contract and you're like, this isn't a good fit. We're going to go into a lawsuit. Leah, have there been examples that you can reference that you can tell us like that may have been a situation or tell us what, if a bride that's listening right now is like, I really want to sue my vendor, what's the next step?
I don't know how people, I mean, I don't know that folks want to hear this, but I tend to think that the first step is to have a conversation. It doesn't really serve anybody to rush into court. It's funny because I was actually talking with a litigator about this and she said, there's this myth out there that like, suing somebody is going to solve all of your problems and it's going to make you feel better. And she said it's honestly quite the opposite in terms of the cost and the emotional toll and the length of time and all of the effort that goes into that. And I, you know, maybe call me optimistic, but I think a lot can be solved and resolved with conversations. And yeah, there might be some back and forth. And yeah, both sides might need to hire lawyers to have conversations to get it resolved. But I don't think going to court really serves anybody. So the starting point for me is just to have a conversation and let them know what you're unhappy with. Obviously, first, you got to take a look at your contract and again, clarify what those obligations were. What was that vendor supposed to do in the situation that, and what are you claiming that they actually didn't do that they were contractually obligated to do?
Also, if I could just piggyback here, this is where I give you like a quick, like come to Jesus from my mom's side here. Also, and we say this to our clients, that vendors, Fallon can tell you that for sure. Please do not respond from a place of emotion. Don't respond from yourself of hysterical emotion. What I mean is that like we make some very dangerous mistakes legally when we're so overwhelmed with like, you know, how personal this thing is, that we will then go say something that can then be used against you at a future point, or can then set the tone for how downhill a conversation is going to go. Leah is the optimist out of both of us for sure. But she does have a great point. Like, just make sure that you're communicating. Like, a lot of things can be solved outside of the courtroom. And don't let Judge Judy fool you.
Who loves a Judge Judy?
I do.
Okay. To close this out, what's one thing that you wish more people knew from the bride side about contracts and just navigating what that looks like?
I want them to understand that a lengthier, more detailed contract is actually not something to be afraid of. It's frankly going to benefit you as the consumer because it's going to cover more. It's going to be clearer. Like we said before, it's going to set forth what happens when something does go wrong rather than leaving everybody guessing. So yeah, I know getting a long contract with a lot of legalese is going to be intimidating. Like that's just a natural reaction to it. But take time, read through it, ask questions, frankly, consult a lawyer if you feel like you need to, but don't just dismiss a contract or dismiss a vendor because you feel like their contract is quote unquote scary.
Kumbi, what's one thing you wish more people knew?
Read your contract before you respond to anything with one of those messages. Like before you, like if you have any confusion, go back to the contract. I think like once everybody has signed it, it's like out of mind a lot of times, but before you make a decision, before you reach out to the vendor for anything that's going to materially impact the decision, for instance, like a cancellation or rescheduling, take a beat. Read the contract. Seek counsel if possible. There's a bunch of places where you can get affordable counsel now too. And then there's obviously like lawyers that you can speak to as well, but seek counsel, read and understand before you make any decisions or before you reach out in any form about something that's going to change the terms of that contract.
My tip is don't send out save the dates until you have a signed contract and paid money to your venue, period.
Hello. And that is that. That is that.
All right, let's get into this listener email. It's long, so everyone grab your popcorn and a wine. Okay. Hi, Fallon. First, love the podcast and your insights. I feel like I'm listening to a wedding fairy godmother every week, and it's been super helpful navigating the wedding planning process. My question is, how many red flags does a venue need to give until I should consider breaking the contract and finding another? My fiance and I are getting married in early October of 2024. My current venue seemed great at first. They had catering on site. There was lodging for people. So we had little to no need to book guest transportation, and it was the classic New England charm that we love. However, as planning has progressed, it feels like if one point of contact tells me one thing, another has something else to say. Our reception is indoors, and the band is a top priority for us. When we toured the venue, we were told a 7-person band would comfortably fit in this space with our guest size. Now I'm being told that the band should not exceed 3 people. This isn't the only time I've heard one thing and then been told something else. On the day we signed the contract, the venue coordinator told my fiance and I that we had reserved the venue ceremony site next to a cute pond. Since the wedding is in October, the colors reflecting in the pond were a selling point for us. Now we're being told that because our reception is in their inside space and not in their outdoor tent, we actually don't have access to that pond ceremony space. Sorry. The third and final straw, making me really worried that this venue is sketchy, is that we were told we could replace the banquet style chairs in the reception hall. Now we've been told that those must stay and we could cover them with the tacky white covering that is way old. Yuck, yuck, yuck. The kicker is that there's nothing in our contract saying we have to use those chairs or that we can't replace them. There's no language limiting the size of our entertainment. And there's nowhere in the contract that limits where our ceremony can or can't be. There can be more than one ceremony on site a day, but their run of shows don't overlap. One is a day slot and ours is a late afternoon, early evening. So I don't know why all of a sudden we can't have our ceremony by the pond. What should we do? Should we jump ship or try to reconcile with the coordinators? I appreciate any insight you might have.
Yeah, I don't. I was just like, did you see my fingers? I feel like, first of all, I'm just going to say, and then I'll let Leah finish. Just like boyfriends, you get 2 red flags and then everything is like, it's getting too much. And I've heard 4. So I'm just saying that. And obviously, this is not legal advice. It's for informational and educational, blah, blah, blah. But it's really, I feel like this is the reason why we're always talking about making sure that everything is documented. Any conversations, any promises, any assurances, anything that would induce you to get into that agreement in the first place should be put in documented writing. Even if you have that conversation over the phone or in person, try and reiterate that conversation via email, via text. Oh, sorry, not via text. Mistake. Via email, like in a properly documented manner in which everybody has that information so that you can go back to it. Because any material deviation from what you were promised is a problem and should be something that, especially since it doesn't even say in the contract specifically, it doesn't say in the contract about any of those things, then you need to be able to show documentation as to why that wouldn't work. For instance, the band situation. That's a conversation that everybody needs to be agreed upon. And then if they're saying that it can't be the way that they had promised in the beginning, then that seems like a fair problem here. The reflection, the reflection of the lake. Yeah.
I want my pond. Where's my pond at? I want my little pond fish.
Yeah. Yeah. That is also,
where's my fall foliage?
Listen, I am the kind of person, anybody that knows me would tell you, I am as, like, I love things when it comes to events, right? So listen, if you want that reflection, you get that reflection. Okay. So if that's something that was promised and you didn't get, you don't get that reflection, it's a conversation to be had. So yeah, well, Lee, you have insight specifically because you and Fallon have been on the same side before. So go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to actually take this from a planner's mm-hmm. practical perspective, because I think the legal side is kind of obvious because you basically just have to give them notice that like they're breaching the contract and try to terminate and pursue legal action that way. But I think from a planner's perspective, because I actually had kind of a very similar situation happen with one of my couples. They had a venue when they did their first site visit. And like at the time they booked, they were clear on their guest count and they were told that one of the buildings on the property would be large enough to hold their guest count. Mm. And that building was a lower price point than the other option at the venue. And then all of a sudden we're in the planning process. And this is kind of when they brought me in, was because they were having some of these very similar red flags. They were like, oh, now all of a sudden the person we did the site visit with has quit. They were the ones that told us we could fit in this building. And now it is just physically impossible to fit their guest count into this building. So now they're being forced to use the other part of the property that's going to be more expensive, that requires like outside rentals, mm-hmm. like having to bring a bathroom in, doing tenting. The other thing was like full building, everything was there. They didn't need to add anything. So the cost was going up significantly. So they hired a planner. So part of my advice to this person would be, if you're not already working with a planner, to consider hiring a planner, because they're going to have the expertise to help you navigate this situation, but also they're going to be able to frankly kind of pick up the slack for this venue. Like things weren't great on the wedding day, but my couple never knew. Like we got it all, you know, on the behind the scenes, me and all the other vendors
everything's
stepped
great.
Up and right. We stepped up and we took care of it and they were a hot mess, but mm-hmm. the couple never knew. And so that's the value of what a planner does. And also I just want to ask them to consider from a practical perspective, like your wedding is not terribly far out. Do you really kind of want to like essentially like blow up the planning process and have to start fresh and find a new venue that may not have, and you might have to change the date. And so all of your vendors, mm-hmm. you know, we obviously don't know the details of where they are in the process, but if you've got all your vendors booked and you have to go and like find a new venue and maybe a new date, that's just a headache.
Good point.
So,
and also I think if they haven't had a conversation yet with the venue, they need to just have a frank and honest conversation with the venue about their concerns.
I agree.
But they should go armed. They should definitely go with every point. So it's not one of those things where you're like receipts will always go a long way because, hey, you don't even know what kind of freebies you're going to get now because a lot of stuff has deviated from what you wanted. But Leah, mm-hmm. see, this is the reason why I'm rocking with a planner, because she just made a very good point. It's October of 2024. Like venues are like good venues or the venues
that's
that are going to fit
season.
Exactly. They're booked up. Like, do you want a situation where you're scrambling? And then also, because it will be a new venue, it could materially impact other contracts in your agreement. And your choice to deviate from that agreement is not it's not a force majeure.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Biting off more than you can chew. So our sense of this is go have a conversation with them. Bring all your receipts, like Kumbi says, bring your tick points. Remember the names of the people you spoke with and when they said this. Well, on this date, Jessica said I could have my pond. And now Mark is saying I can't have my pond. And I think you both have said it, but after having conversations, every time I do a site visit, I follow up immediately with a nice little email. Thank you guys so much for showing us. We're so excited that you've added an extra hors d'oeuvre. We're so excited that, you know, you said you're going to clean the pool. We're so excited. Thank you. Love. Any parting words? Because I'm out of questions. I mean, I have tons more questions, but I think that our time is, I think we went over our time.
my parting words is save your ass, hire an attorney. Hmm.
And my parting words are, there's a lot of power in communication, just talking to people.
Oh, you guys are perfect for each other. You guys are a match made in heaven. And if folks want to follow you, where can they find you?
Great question. You can find us individually at Kumbi ESQ and The Leah Weinberg. And then our law firm, Odeberg, you can find us at Odeberg Law.
I live. All right. Thank you so much, Kumbi. Thank you so much, Leah. And thank you to our listeners for allowing me to be your bride guide this past year. Please, I tell you, my friends, I love you all. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now. Be sure to subscribe, like I tell you every week. I told you subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Thank you so much for listening. And till death do us part. The Betches Brides podcast is produced by Rebecca Salzmacat and Lauren Salome. Editing by Rebecca Salzmacat. Social media by Lauren Salome. Be sure to follow us at Betches Brides and send us your emails to brides@betches.com. Betches.